Very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse Professor Martin Drum from Notre Dame University. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, Michael. Pleasure as always.
There's never a dull day, really, in politics, is there? The Liberal Party have had their leadership contest this morning. Angus Taylor, Angus with one S, replaces Susan Lee, Susan with two S's, or in fact three S's if you look at it, as leader of the opposition Liberal Party. Martin, let me read out to you. You will have been across these and more, some of the headlines that we see in the morning papers, hard copy and online. The Guardian: Susan Lee to quit Parliament after losing Liberal leadership to Angus Taylor. They go on with some other stories as well. Susan Lee made promises she couldn't keep, and some in the Liberal Party never wanted her to. And another article: who is Angus Taylor? Long touted as a Liberal leader, some colleagues see only style, no substance. The ABC similarly say Susan Lee to quit politics after losing spill, sitting up by-election. And they add to that, Angus Taylor becomes Liberal leader, defeating Susan Lee 34 to 17 votes. And WA Today, part of the old Fairfax Group, the Nine Entertainment Group, the headline in all of the Sydney Morning Heralds and Ages and WA Today: Lee to quit politics and give Taylor, quote unquote, clean air in emotional address after losing Lib's leadership. And then further on, they have analysis. Susan Lee took this job with ambition and promise, but things soon unravelled. And the further news that Angus Taylor is elected Liberal Party leader, Jane Hume deputy, as Susan Lee resigns. The conversation, Michelle Grattan notes, Angus Taylor defeats Susan Lee by a hefty margin of 34 to 17 as Liberal leader. And she goes on with a further article headed, how did the Liberals' first female leader find herself on the mat in under a year? SBS News similarly ask how it happened as Angus Taylor asked Susan Lee in Liberal showdown. And it goes on and on. Very interestingly, Pauline Hanson from One Nation has issued a statement already, Martin, noting that there's going to be a by-election in Farrah. One Nation will be contesting the by-election in Farrah with a strong candidate that represents regional New South Wales, the rural sector, and someone who understands the issues of the Murray-Darling and water, she says. Well, Martin, I'm just going to sit back in my chair and pass it all over to you. Neither of us are surprised that this has happened, are we?
No, I think a lot of people saw this coming for some time. So there's a lot of different issues to unpack there, Michael. Why don't we start from the top? So today we've seen Angus Taylor replace Suzanne Lee as leader of the Liberal Party and as opposition leader for Australia. And that marks the end of a very short milestone, that being Suzanne Lee, the first woman to lead the Liberal Party at the federal level. And also, I should say, the first female opposition leader of any party, Michael.
Tough job, Martin.
Tough job, both tough jobs. I'd say leader of the opposition is often described as the hardest job in politics, and it probably is. You finish your term, unless you're elected as a prime minister, what can you point to as your achievements? Often you can't, because you're in opposition. And indeed, I think she would struggle to point to a lot of really definitive achievements, but in her defence, not many opposition leaders can. Look, they're at the heart of this, really. You can talk about all the divisions within the Liberal Party, well, maybe we'll come to them, but at the heart of this is a really substantive collapse in the polling for the Liberal Party. They're in a really bad way. The coalition generally is in a really bad way. They're facing two threats. One threat is from One Nation on their right flank, and that's in regional areas in particular. And you can see them surging in the polling. They're outpolling the coalition for the first time in Australian history. And then on the other hand, you've got the reality over the last two elections, they've lost a lot of their ground in the city. And some of that to Labor, but most notably in the city heartland to Teal independents. So that's two different really big challenges, which are almost becoming existential. And James Patterson probably summed up how a lot of MPs were feeling. He said basically, it's the total collapse in Liberal Party support and the votes they've been losing all over the place which have brought this on. That's not to say there aren't any divisions in the Liberal Party that have contributed to this.
Martin, you keep educating me and all of our listeners, and getting us to realise that the support for major parties these days is nothing like it used to be, and it's not only measured in votes at the ballot box. Ernest Tony Abbott, I think, made the point the other day that if you look at the membership numbers going back, I'm not sure, 60s, 70s, 80s of the Liberal Party, they were quite large. Look at it today, and it's quite low. There's various ways to measure what's going on in the public's mind when it comes to major parties, including the Libs.
To give you some sense on how hollowed out our major parties are, I don't have the exact figures, but I would bet you that most AFL clubs, at least probably half of them, have more members than either the Liberal Party or the Labor Party nationally.
So you're suggesting that the Fremantle Dockers should run somewhere in Fremantle, Martin?
They've got more members than the Liberal Party or Labor Party would have. It's look, and someone might correct me, but it's around about 40 to 50,000 nationally that each of those parties have, and that's not much.
Well, famously, when I was a boy learning about politics, it seemed that the famous Archbishop Mannix, the sort of Irish Catholic patriarch in Melbourne, told all the Catholics how to vote, Martin. They have virtually got their own candidates up before the split.
That's right. These parties traditionally been mass support parties and had big memberships, and they that have robust party meetings. Now there's still some robust party meetings, but these are professional outfits, our political parties these days, rather than mass membership outputs. Part of that is actually more systemic than just support. People are going off and following groups on Facebook rather than formally joining organisations. And unless you throw carrots at people like tickets to football games, why would they become members? Those sorts of things, Michael. That's a broader issue in society. But I think you can really gauge this by the collapse in support for the Labor and Liberal parties over 25 years. This is not a recent phenomenon. And independents, Greens, and One Nation are doing well. And we saw that the last election, it started to translate into seats.
Martin, it's really interesting. I've just finished Nikki Souther's most recent book on the most recent federal election, the 25 election won by Anthony Albanese. And it's fascinating. She has wonderful access to the key players on all sides, Peter Dutton as he was going out, Anthony Albanese as he was coming back in. She quotes people like Senator Patterson, who just mentioned, who seems to be a highly articulate, clever comms guy. Sort of centre right, I suppose one would describe him. And you really do wonder how the Liberals can be so hollowed out. I mean, is it just to be explained by the resurgent or surgent rather than resurgent One Nation? Is it their other policies? I mean, the Teals have come and filled some huge vacuum in the metropolitan areas.
I think if you go back again several decades, a lot of people voted in a very steady and consistent manner. And there's been research into this and that showed that people were rusted on to political parties. And some of them had voted Labor or Liberal all their lives. Younger people are certainly not wedded in the same way. And even people are older, less wedded in that way. So voter attributes are changing. And the world that we're living in is quite a complex place. And we're seeing sort of resurgence of these, particularly what we might call populist right movements, in many places around the world.
Martin, what's interesting in the sort of flow-on discussions, both immediately before and now immediately after the deposing of Susan Lee as the Libs leader, is the identification by various politicians of what they say are the important issues, at least outside the Labor government world. And they seem to start with migration and float figures around which make you scratch your head. Apparently there's 500,000 people have turned up here. You always get the sense that they're undocumented and we'll have to bring in ICE to throw them out. I mean, what are the issues that are you going to hear banged on and banged on about? Cost of living gets thrown up.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the cost of living there. I think I'll start there and then segue into migration, Michael, because it's a very expensive place to live. A lot of people are struggling to find housing. All their bills are going up, energy, gas, and grocery bills, etc. They're finding it difficult to make ends meet. And then that's where the heart of the problem. So they don't believe that a lot of politicians and political parties are delivering effectively enough. Whether that's fair or unfair analysis, all of us can judge. But then that segues into who's to blame. And
Who's to blame? Who's to
that's where
blame?
immigration comes in.
It's coloured people who come from the subcontinent.
All these people that are coming in then are said to be putting the pressures on housing, it's a supply and demand issue. But I think pr principally supply in housing is a huge issue, and there's a lot of evidence that supports that in particular. But it's very easy to blame immigration for what a broader structural problems in the economy.
Martin, Susan Lee is going off into the sunset, and we, like everybody, wish her well. Could well have started our introduction to this episode today to say what I often say, and that is I have a great admiration for people who go into public life, who put their hand up for whichever parties they go in. They have, I believe, the interests of this country at heart, whether or not you think their proposals for improving or helping the country are the best ones. So it's a tough job, as we've said. Being the opposition leader is probably the tougher one. And she came in at a time when, after a number of bad election performances, the Libs had been drubbed, totally drubbed. So was she ever going to succeed?
Yeah, this is an important consideration. She comes in at a really low point for the Liberal Party when they're under a lot of pressure and the waves going out against them. So she had an enormous task to turn that around. And Angus Taylor, again, has an enormous task to turn that around. And so she's got, then, what can she do? She had difficulty because probably a fair bit of the party room were more conservative than her. And that's difficult because you've got to make headway in policy against that. But I wouldn't say all of that, none of that's her fault. It's always a mixture. They took ages to get to the net zero policy position. That took probably about 6 months when it should have been three. And that led to various people going out and commenting and bagging out their own party beforehand. They still don't have a policy on immigration, even though they say that's really important. And they're the two things they've been talking about quite a lot. But what I think a lot of people are worried about are the cost of living. And sure, they've critiqued the government on that, which they should, and that's part of the job of opposition. But they haven't advanced yet any ideas really around resolving that. So that is a job of the leader to oversee policy development. And the other mistake that she made is, she brought on that discussion about hate speech, and then it blew up in her face. So, she's not totally absolved of any element of this, Michael. It's always a mixture of your own performance and then the environment you're in.
There'll be some asking the question, and I'm about to ask it. Do you think the fact she's a woman has anything to do with it?
It's a look, that's an intangible. All those things we sort of presented suggest that there are plenty of other factors at play. I note that they've selected a deputy leader as a woman, Jane Hume. I think that's helpful for them. They certainly have had a big decline in support from female voters, and that has been evidenced. So they've got an issue in trying to drill into that and trying to make a difference there, particularly in the cities. So women in the cities are a big problem. I mean, this won't help with that, but I'm always of the view that it's not just about having a female leader, Michael. It's about your policy settings. It's about the way you go about discussing issues like family violence and the like that will all play into this.
So, what about Angus Taylor? The suggestion that he's seen by some colleagues as only style and no substance. He comes with what back in the 60s or 70s, it would have seemed like a required background, brought up in the country in a generation of the old farming community, went to boarding school in Sydney at King's, went to Sydney Uni and came out with, I think, economics and law, won a Rhodes Scholarship, went to Oxford. He's the guy. I mean, he's bound to succeed, isn't he?
I've seen plenty of discussion about his background, and sort of it's been suggested that he'll be out of touch. I think it's about how you conduct yourself, of course, not just your background. I never bag out someone who's had a sort of strong formal education, Michael, because it'd be hypocritical of me working in the university. So all of those facts are true, but he's got every opportunity, like any other opposition leader, to really model himself on the concerns of everyday people. And that starts now. As at the time of the podcast, I hadn't heard his opening salvo as opposition leader. That will be really important because it sets the tone. And how he talks about issues will really be crucial here, and particularly sort of addressing how a lot of people are doing it tough at the moment.
It is going to be interesting. Yes, and I have to avoid hypocrisy as well. Privately educated, brought up as a Catholic, Martin, have all sorts of different views on the world today. But how is Angus Taylor going to appeal to people like me and my friends and those of us in Fremantle? Is he going to try and rope us in? Are we going to see some reflection of the wider Australia in the shadow cabinet that the coalition pulls together?
So there's two elements you're talking to there. What kind of focus will he have, and how will he sort of pick his cabinet? The first one, if he's smart, I think he'll focus on economic issues because that's what matters to a lot of people. It's actually where his background is, so he should have something to offer there. The opposition didn't set the world alight with their economic policies at the last election. There was a lot of criticism, including internal, about how they performed there. It's said to be a part of their own post-election analysis. He was shadow treasurer. Now, the word out from his supporters was that Dutton put the handbrake on a lot of things he wanted to do. Now, if that's the case, he can do them now, surely, as opposition leader. And he has to come out hard and really try and articulate that side of things, because that's the only avenue to make inroad to both the Teals in the city and to the regional voters in the country. He may go down the cultural wars front, but the problem with that is I think that will lose a lot, what few voters they still have in the city, and won't help them pick up those seats they've lost.
Martin, there's a fascinating piece quoting Malcolm Turnbull, the former Liberal Prime Minister, on The Guardian right now. Let me read it to you and get your take as to whether Angus Taylor will heed this. I'm reading it from the top. Turnbull says people call Taylor, quote unquote, the best qualified idiot they've ever met. Then it goes on. Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the new Liberal leader Angus Taylor must immediately rebuild the party's credibility on the economy. Well, he's obviously agreeing with you, Martin. Labor passed the coalition in opinion polling on effective management of the economy under former leader Peter Dutton when Taylor was the shadow treasurer. Turnbull told ABC TV, people call Taylor, as I just quoted, the best qualified idiot they've ever met. He said, that is to say, Turnbull said, Taylor should get out of the right-wing media bubble led by Murdoch's Sky News. And then, quote, if you're the Liberal Party and you've got business reform, tax reform, efficiency reform that you want to propose, you've got to get some backers from the business community, from third-party endorsements, and they lack that. They've got to stop living in this right-wing populist bubble and get back and sound like serious business people wanting to get a better outcome for Australia. End of that quote. And he said, they should stop fighting for the centre. Sorry, the Liberals should fight for the centre and not go up against One Nation and Pauline Hanson chasing votes on the right. Good advice.
I agree with some of that. Bear in mind, Malcolm Turnbull himself is a multimillionaire who does very well with the big end of town and the like. I think that they do need to connect with business, but I think small business is a bigger tranche there. And I also think if you're too close to the top end of town, so to speak, and you're seen that way, then are you really addressing the concerns of people around the kitchen table. Now, I know that's a euphemism, a metaphor, but what I'm trying to say is if you know lots of people are finding it difficult, that's who you've got to target your policies towards, not, bigger profits from major multinationals.
Martin, the government, the Labor Party ministers and others are all practicing their lines to put in the barbs and screw whatever they can screw into the new man leading the Libs. Do you think they'll take any particular line, or will they go softly on him and let him sort of stew in his own juices?
I think they're already rehearsing their line on him. One of them is that they're enjoying emphasising the sight of the Liberals tearing down their first female leader. Mind you, there's a bit of hypocrisy there because some of the same people who are making that point tore down Australia's first female Prime Minister. So you've got to be careful when you're in glass houses there. So there's that. But I think really they are emphasising the all style, no substance argument that Turnbull's prosecuted there, in that he's very well qualified. He comes in with a string, a long line of attributes, and we haven't seen much. And I think that's where they're going to probably lay most of their attack.
Yes, you certainly get a lot of the comments that he's straight out of central casting. He's tall, good looking to some. Question is whether there is any substance to go with the style. Well, it's probably too soon for us to make predictions as to the outcomes. We'll be watching closely. What do you think will now happen so far as parliamentary performance and the coalition being involved in parliament is concerned?
He'll certainly want to, up the ante, get it more aggressive in their attack against the government. There'll be some different faces on that front bench. Expect Andrew Hastie to come back in. Jane Hume was sidelined as well. She's in the other house, which is another whole separate issue as a senator. But there'll be some different faces in that lineup. There were some people there that appeared to be nice people but didn't really land a blow. So there's a few competing elements there to size up. I think they probably do need a full reshuffle of those portfolios.
I imagine the old National Party, as I call them, country party people who are excluded, will come back. They won't even have to serve their 6 weeks on the in the bin, Martin. Do you think we're going to see more people though out of the country party, National Party?
Well, this is the other element that's quite important. We know that Suzanne Ley and David Littleproud had a very poor relationship, but like I said, I actually attribute that to the Nationals being really worried about One Nation and trying to differentiate their brand from the Liberals. I think that's actually more important than Littleproud Ley. But I think from what I hear, Angus Taylor has a better relationship with Littleproud. Maybe that might make a difference. The coalition's back together. But there's still this issue of those Nationals MPs that apparently supported something in shadow cabinet, then went out and voted against it in parliament. And that doesn't really depend on who the leader is. That's generally in those major parties a big no-no. So Angus Taylor will have to deal with that. A lot of the Liberal MPs were very unhappy with this. So that's a tricky one for him to address.
Martin, going back to my quote from Pauline Hanson earlier in this podcast, one of the first interesting, not so much a test, but some sort of test is the by-election that'll happen in Farrer. How quickly can they bring a by-election on, or how quickly does it happen? And what sort of margin do the Libs have there? And what sort of candidate do you reckon First Nation will run?
So the seat of Farrer is very conservative territory. There's no chance that Labor will run in it. They've not come, they're not, it's generally between the Liberals and Nationals. It was held by Tim Fischer, former Nationals leader and Deputy Prime Minister, pretty well loved in that area. Suzanne Ley won by just a couple hundred votes against the Nationals candidate.
And ambassador to the Vatican, I think.
He was. So very significant. Kevin Rudd, no less, appointed him to that role. So he was very respected across the political spectrum, Tim Fischer.
So, what would you expect to happen in Farrer in this climate in a month or two, whenever they get the by-election?
It will be an extraordinary one to watch. I think there's multitude of possibilities here, and I think it's looking pretty tough for the Liberal Party. So the Nationals will certainly contest it. They can contest a vacant seat. So there's Liberals and Nationals. There's a possibility of a community independent coming in. They finished second last time. So that's a factor. And the other one, so they may well run again with the vacant seat. And then you've got One Nation,
This
who is
sounds like
surging.
Australia in a complete egg cup.
This is a big test for the right of politics, as who is more popular. It will be one to watch.
Well, I think Susan Lee ought to be given some sort of national award. She's brought on a by-election in Farrer, and Australians are going to learn a lot about themselves. A community candidate who ran second last time, the Nats who want to push out the Libs. Pauline Hanson, who thinks she's Nigel Thingamabob
Raj.
from the Reform Party, Farage, and that she'll win and she'll be forming. It's going to be one hell of a by-election, Martin.
Oh, it'll be a great one to watch. Get your popcorn out.
Well, I think you and I might have to fly and report live from Farrer. What's the biggest town or city in the Farrer region?
Well, there's Albury, Deniliquin. It goes all the way across to the New South Wales border. I was born in a small town called Corowa, Michael, which is in the seat of Farrer.
Corowa was a very famous town. I've always liked the name Deniliquin, but I have friends in Albury. We might have to report from Albury, Martin, if not Corowa.
They're both great places.
Martin, this has been a really good discussion, and I think people quite seriously are going to be thinking all about what the by-election in Farrer is going to mean. It's going to be some sort of indicator, is it not, as to what is going to happen over the next while.
It'll be a huge test for the Liberals, the Nationals, and One Nation. And we don't know if this independent will run again, but hey, it's a good test for everyone in the fight.
Martin, see you next Friday.
Look forward to it.